accession number 20362, reel 2.
Charles Porter, reel 2.
When we had reached the ceiling as far as the turret, the machine gun and the main gun was cut to size and with balloon fabric, waterproof fabric, and all the edges were stuck down with Bostik against the turret itself, and just inside the ceiling we ran some gun cotton, which went right round the surface of the balloon fabric. Come off the land, the tank landing craft, into the sea, and travelled through the water onto the beach. There we had to blast the balloon fabric off, which is the idea of the gun cotton, which freed the firing of the guns. The tank had twin engines, and on each side of the tank was two main louvers, which were the air intake for the engines, and these were again sealed with a huge, about 6 foot high, metal box, which fixed onto the air louver, and they were fixed up with stays on the side of the tank to hold them in position. And when, apart from landing, releasing the guns by triggering off the balloon fabric around the guns, we released a manual control, and these two huge air that were covering the air intakes, these boxes, just fell off each side to the ground, and that cleared the air louvers ready for the engine to be started up. And from then onwards, we were completely free for action.
Can you tell me about the procedure for crossing the channel, please?
Yes, we landed, we boarded a tank landing craft, which was at Gosport, and this was an American tank landing craft. And there were three troops that were on the tank landing craft. That was 15 troop, 11 troop, and 13 troop. I believe that's the three that were there. We drove underneath, and the tanks were sealed underneath and chained to the side of the tank landing craft. The unfortunate thing, we had a tremendous storm at the time that we boarded, and we all had to do guard because the tanks were swaying a little bit in the storm. And there we stayed, just anchored off Gosport for about 3 days until the storm gradually petered out, at least as though we could sail anyway. And this we did after 3 days. And we set sail then across the channel and landed just offshore, and the American commander of the tank landing craft said he couldn't go any further because the depth of the water. So he just downed the front of the flap of the tank landing craft, and off we drove. Each tank followed one another onto the beach. As we reached the beach, as we were going up through the water into the beach, we just released everything so that we was in fighting condition.
What depth of water were you in?
I would think it would be probably about 4 or 5 feet deep, I would think. That was about all. I thought we were rather fortunate as we went off, because it only reached somewhere about at the base of the turret, I would think. And then as we started to drive up, obviously the water was getting shallower. So that was a good point anyway in landing.
Did any water come in?
No water at all. Absolutely dry. And all the crew, remember, were inside. So really the driver and the co-driver were underwater as we landed. But no, we didn't. We were lucky. One of the reasons perhaps maybe that we were lucky is because our troop sergeant, Sergeant Bob Anderson, he had, prior to the sealing in Aldershot, he had gone on to a 6 weeks sealing course, which they showed him through exactly what to do, and he was the one that came back and instructed the squadron the procedures of sealing. Lucky enough, he was our troop sergeant, so that did help. So that was a great help as far as we were concerned.
And you were still in the same troop?
Still in the same troop, yeah.
Were you conscious of being under fire as you landed?
Not really. We landed on there, and it was the matter of just our constant training all the time. You know, we was prepared to expect anything. And when we landed, we had to, each tank had to report, and this was operated through the troop officer. He had to land, he had to operate and find the beachmaster. And the beachmaster, it was all organised. As you landed, you found him, and he was the one that controlled the area of where to go to, so that you'd meet up with the rest of your squadron.
Which beach had you landed on?
We landed on Juno.
What happened then?
We met up with the rest of the squadron, and then we met up with the squadron leader. And from then onwards, we operated as a squadron. Everybody had to be quiet because we weren't far off the front line from then onwards. And all we had to do then was we just waited and prepared everything until we was ordered, really, or spoken to about our first action, which was going to take place at an area called Cheux, C-H-E-U-X, in Normandy. And we, C Squadron, was going into a counter-attack done by the German forces. We went, reached there, and we was to support the 15th Scottish Division in Cheux, and we were to start on a particular start line, which was just at the base of Cheux Church. And 12 Troop was ordered along a little sunken track. And as we went along the sunken track, we went no more than 20 yards along the sunken track, and our troop officer was withdrawn from the tank. The squadron leader had called him back for some reason unknown, and he had to take over as 2IC, second IC. In that case, operator, which was Corporal Bannon, he had to take over as tank commander. We had to have a spare crew come up, which was a chap named Sandy Powell. He took over as a wireless op. The troop sergeant then had to take over as troop leader. So we had virtually a sergeant as troop leader, Sergeant Bob Anderson, and we had the other two tanks had two corporals, Corporal Bannon, which had taken over as tank commander. The other tank was Corporal Davis, which was the official troop corporal anyway. And we then carried on, as the changeover came, we carried on down the sunken road at the side of the church, and we noticed infantry were coming from our left-hand side from a field, and wounded were, they were in terrible state, you know, just coming back, get out of the way, you know. We just went a little bit further down the track, and it was obvious that we had to give support to the infantry. We turned left into a gap in the hedge, which was wide enough to take a Churchill tank. And inside, the infantry, the counter-attack was coming in across the main field. And the infantry were many, many, many casualties, there. And we had the, just on the edge of the, in the sunken road, there was a high-ranking infantry officer, and people were trying to get out of the field, the infantry were trying to get out of the field as quickly as they could, and the infantry officer, those that were capable, he was just getting them back into the field. Those that couldn't, just that were could walk, were walking past our three tanks back to the medical centre. We went into the field, and we split into the field, as our troop sergeant said, you know, one tank to the left, one in the centre, one to the right. We went to the right of the field, just at the edge of the field. Our troop sergeant went to the centre, and our other troop corporal to the left. And we'd been into the field and could see what was happening. But before we could attempt to open up to fire a shot, our particular tank had been hit, and we'd been hit by an HA armour piercing shell from a German tank in front of us, which were just waiting for somebody to come through the hedge. We were hit next to us, the armour piercing shell had come through about 5.5 inches of steel through the front of the tank where the driver was sitting. The shot had come in, it had gone completely up his side. As we were traversed at 12 o'clock, the shot had come round the turret, with luckily had missed the operator, missed the tank commander, and where I was sitting in the gunner's seat, it swiveled round and stopped right by my feet. The co-driver, he had received the blast and the shock as the shock came through. And what we had to do then was immediately get out, because we knew that if we'd been hit once, we were going to be hit again. And he had missed the ammunition, luckily enough, first time round. And so we started to bail out the tank. We got out the tank, and we were right at the side of a bomb crater. We got out of the tank, and on the blind side of the tank, we dived off the side into this crater, where we just looked round to find who had come out and who hadn't. And we found that the driver hadn't come out. Roy Painter hadn't come out. So the first thing we had to do, our top priority in our training, was to look after one another. So I crawled up with my revolver in my hand up the side of the crater, and on the blind side of the tank, climbed up and got back into the tank, into the turret, and crawled down onto the turret floor, into the front where the driver was. And I could see he was in a bad state. So I opened up the escape hatch at the side where the driver was, and opened it up and shouted through to those that were in the crater to climb up the side and try and help me get Roy Painter out. A couple of the lads here climbed up the side, and as I tried to get Roy Painter's shoulders through the hatch, which wasn't very wide, it wasn't easy because he was in more or less two parts. So I pushed him through, and they helped him out, and managed to get him into the crater below. And I then came through the same escape hatch, because I didn't go through the top again. And lucky enough, we hadn't been hit again. So we got down into the crater. And as I had came up into the tank to have a look, see where the driver was, I noticed the troop sergeant's tank, which was almost at the side of us, they had bailed out the same as what we had, and they had been hit virtually in the identical place as we had, and the same thing had happened to their driver. And they were trying to attend to him as we were trying to attend to our driver. After a little while, we found that while I was in there, I'd got out the first aid kit. And from the first aid kit, I'd open it up and took out the morphine and give him a shot of morphine in his arm. And we were trained that if we had to do this, we had to give him the shot in the arm, and then in blood we had to mark a cross on the forehead, because when he went back, everybody around knew by that mark that he had added morphine, because it was dangerous to give him an extra dose. And that's what I did. So we found no way could we stay where we were. So we said, well, I'll have to go up. And I went up onto the, with my revolver in my hand, went up to the edge of the crater. The others around the tank obviously had tried to get their driver back as soon as they could. But as I crawled up to the top, I saw two infantry medics, and they had the Red Cross band on their arm. They were infantry medics, and they had a stretcher. And I said to them, do you think that you could help out? We've got somebody badly wounded. And they said, we can't really. We're up here looking for our own people, which were in a bad state. And they said, but we'll give you the stretcher. Would you like the stretcher? So I took the stretcher, climbed down the crater again, and then we put the Roy Painter on the stretcher, and we decided we were going to make for it, get up there and make back. So we climbed up, carried him along through. We was on the edge of the church, went through the back of the church with a stretcher, down to the front of the church, where the infantry were dug in on the front of the church. And when we got along there, we found a Red Cross jeep, which were the stretchers on the top, and they were quickly getting the wounded back as quick as they could. And we put Roy Painter on the stretcher, and they took him back. Unfortunately, Roy had died the next day. And as we came back from there, we had to meet up with the squadron to get replaced with new tanks. And the next day, as we were replaced with tanks, on the way back, I could see across there, and there was our driver buried there. So that was the story of Hugh.
What date was that your tank was hit?
26th of June.
How did all that affect your morale?
Our morale, we were all in the 19-year-olds and 20, so we'd had other casualties. When we got back, we'd had other casualties. And what it did do, it completely wrecked our 12 troop, which we'd trained together for a long time. And then we suddenly found that the co-driver had gone back to England through blast. We'd lost our driver. The corporal of Wireless Hop, which was then our tank commander, they'd taken him back to back to England. So, and the co-driver had had blast. So in actual fact, I was the only one really of the original crew that was replaced on another tank. And then we had spare crews. So we were virtually starting again. My tank, anyway, was starting again from scratch with all new people on the crew.
What happened then?
We were issued with tanks, and then on the 29th of June, our commanding officer, they asked whether he could was capable of going back into action straight away, and he said that no, we want fit as a fighting unit to go back in. We've got to have a day's rest, you know, to reorganise. This we did, and the next action we went in was the 29th of June, and it was on the 29th of June that Sergeant Bob Anderson then he got hit with a mortar, and he got blast, and he went back to England.
What happened to you on the 29th of June?
Okay, I was okay. We just went into action, and we did our usual firing as we would do, and I was from then onwards, this what it was every time you went into action. This was the routine. You came back, and you never came back with everybody, and you just looked around to see who was missing next or who was wounded next. You just took it as a matter of form. That's what was going to happen. So you just carried on. Crews were replaced. Officers were switched around because other officers in other squadrons which were lost. My troop officer, Frank Drew, he was wounded on the 29th and in the face on my tank. And he got treatment but carried on. Other squadrons were really being hit hard as well. And then we lost our Frank Drew. He was made up to captain and went as captain in A squadron. So we'd lost him. Then we got another replacement officer to take over. So that was the routine of this hectic 6 weeks, I suppose, from when we landed in, you know, on in June.
What did you think of the Germans who were opposing you?
Well, we knew, unfortunately, that we had to. It was either you or them, you know. And it suddenly became that you just had to protect your tank, your crew, and mainly the infantry round you, mainly the infantry, because we felt so sorry for them that on foot at the side of us. And on the other hand, they felt sorry for us for being inside a tank, you know, went both ways.
Did you have any contact with civilians in Normandy?
Very rarely. Only once when we were moving along once in the line, and there was a lot of mortars taking place, and one civilian house in the village we were going through, they were hit badly by two or three mortars, and we could hear quite some screams from in there, and we had to stop the tank, and the two or three of us got out of the tank and went inside the cottage, and there was the mother there with three children. They'd been badly hit, and the mother was been killed, and the three children were sort of taking cover under the bed, and we pulled the three children out, took them out and managing to get them back as much as we could, because we were on to, had to move again, get them back to as much as we could to the Red Cross people that were just behind us. And then from then onwards, at that stage, that's the only time that we'd met up with civilians.
Were the children wounded?
No, the children weren't wounded, no, but they were really, really frightened. And so we had to get them out as quick as we possibly could, which we did do.
Any other specific incidents or dates that stick out in your mind from this period?
The only one particular action that we went into, it was to support the infantry again. And in front of us, it was again another counter-attack coming in. Excuse me. And we could see the German infantry in front, and the infantry, our infantry were behind our tanks. And we had to go into the front and open fire in front of them, you know, which we did do. And our commanding officer of C Squadron, Ronnie Holden, he had ordered the tanks to cease fire. And when they were to cease fire, then the infantry would go behind us and go through and go in, which they did do. And way in front of us, a lot of the German infantry were in six trenches. The infantry went through, our guns then were silent, and they walked past us through the corn into where we could see where the trenches were. And I was through the tank, through the telescope, I was watching the infantry go through, and as one of the infantry, which had fixed bayonets, had reached these trenches, one of the German infantry came out of the trench and with his hands up, and the infantry were going to take prisoner. And just behind, that was on the left-hand side of the infantry as I was looking out the telescope, on the right-hand side, a German infantry had come out of the trench and was at the back of our infantry, and I saw he went to lift his rifle up, and although we had ceased fire, I had to do something, so I lifted the sights up and opened up with a machine gun over the top of the heads. When I did this, immediately I did this, everybody went down. Our infantry went down, the German infantry went down. Our commanding officer, he went berserk over the radio because he knew the tank that did it. And I had to talk to him and I had to say, well, I had to explain what had happened. And he just said, okay, that's okay, just keep your eyes peeled. And that was the end of the incident. And then the infantry got up when there was ceasefire and it just started again where prisoners were taken and brought back behind the tanks.
Where did that incident take place?
I couldn't tell you the name of it. All I know, it was somewhere around the end of June. But the actual name of the place, I couldn't really say where it was. But it was around, I would think it was around the Shoe area, you know.
What happened then?
We just carried on, and then we were called back, and which was the normal routine after an action. You pulled back, and somebody else took over, and you came back to relax and get food or whatever it may be, or whatever you was ordered to do by the commanding officer.
Did you go into action again in Normandy?
Oh yes, we went in a series of times, backwards and forwards from there. The names of the places, because they were so close together, it was very difficult to name them, you know. I do remember one particular place, and again, all within the area, where the squadron was surrounded, and the officer commanding, he had ordered all the tanks to get in.